Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media. A good story is a good story. Hosted by Marsha Casper Cook. Live shows every week with interesting interviews in the entertainment field with writers, producers, directors, and screenwriters. There's also shows about newsworthy topics and group discussions about writing tips to help writers reach success. New to the show are conversations about personal struggles and how to feel good about yourself in today's world. One thing's for sure, it's always a lively conversation and lots of fun. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Marsha, and I'm going to sit back today because we have a lot going on today, and I'm not going to talk about much else other than the show. Maybe. Who knows what I'll come up with. But Kristen Lindsay Haker, she's all the co-host today, and we're going to have, and we have Becca. Becca, is it S-Y-M-E, sign? Is that how we say it?
Time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like time.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, good. That was good. I did that good. All right. So anyway, we're going to get right into it, and I'm just going to let Lindsay say who she is for a little bit, and then Becca will tell you all about herself, and we have a full show because Becca's got a lot going on. I should say this before the show. I am also an author, podcast host for the last 15 years, screenwriter. I know because Kristen is on thinking in her head, will I say who I am? Because everybody keeps telling me I'm not telling people who I am. So this is who I am. I've done this for 20 years and podcasts for over 15. So, Kristen, okay, are you happy? I said it now. There you go.
Yes.
I said who I was. Okay. All right. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about who you are and then Becca can come on.
Well, I'm Kristen Lindsay Haker, and I'm a young adult and contemporary romance writer. And my new release just came out a couple weeks ago, Stars in the City. And I'm really excited because not only is it a second chance romance, but it's a sports romance set in college basketball during March Madness, which I absolutely love. In fact, I'm currently recording 3 games, 1 finish MSU, and I'm currently waiting to see Oakland University tonight and the Dayton Flyers play. My college, my alma mater, yep, isn't even in this. University of Michigan isn't even playing, and I'm still recording 3 games today. So I'm so excited about it. Like I said, I even wrote a character playing in March Madness in my book. So I'm just really excited about today. And a game is currently starting right now, but don't worry, I have it recorded. But nobody text me spoilers during this podcast.
Oh, and you know what? I got to say one thing before you do that. Okay, because you like a certain character that I watch also on Young and Restless. So I'd like to do a show on that. So if anybody out there watches Young and Restless, I've been watching it forever. I watched it when I was much younger. Then I stopped watching it because I was working full-time. And then my mother was 6, and I got watching it again. And now I tape it. So, but Kristen and I, we've known each other. We've never talked about the fact that we both watch it. So if anybody wants to come on a show, I think we're going to have a show talking about the characters and the story and everything about them. So, okay.
Yes.
That's it. You never know what you're going to find out about somebody, right? I know. Okay, so Becca, you want to tell everybody a lot about yourself because you have so much going on. Oh, my God.
I do.
You do. Okay, go ahead.
I also want to say, too, I am a huge March Madness fan. I have the TV also recording in the other room, and my alma mater played yesterday and unfortunately lost. Sorry, Montana State. Yeah, it was unfortunate. But also, this is my favorite time of year, just the 4 days of the first round of the March Madness, and specifically because I think all writers kind of instinctively love things that have high stakes attached to them. Right, where it's like, I care, right? There's nothing more exciting to me than watching the high stakes of, like, the tournament of March Madness just because it really is unpredictable. You honestly never know what's going to happen. And I think so many writers could, right? Like, I mean, again, no spoilers, but the team that won the game right before I came on here, I'm like, how did they do that? And it's so exciting, and then you get to go talk about it. So, like, there's so much overlap between sports and books. For me, it
yes.
makes so much sense to write books about sports. So, like, that, I love that. So,
and Cinderella stories. I love that trope.
Oh,
I love the trope. And
I love
that. You know. Yeah, that's I'm so excited about Oakland University. I have family that goes there, too, and I'm just ridiculously excited about Oakland University being in this tournament.
I love that. Yeah,
I like the idea, Dan, of putting that together, though, is how much competition and everything is with writing.
Yeah,
and
it's so cool.
You know, to add that together.
Yeah, it was my favorite,
my favorite
thing to write in the book.
I bet.
I do like that.
I love that. Well, I'll have to read those when those come out. And my background, I'm also a writer, so I started off in fiction writing early, kind of, I guess, young in my life, not young in the publishing trajectory, but I did start early in the indie publishing kind of disruption, where when I first started publishing, it was, you know, brand new that indies were, that
right.
non-trad authors were even allowed to publish. And so what I started doing was I had a lot of friends who were authors who were asking questions about things like, you know, why is this happening to me? Why am I, why can I not be like this other person? Or, you know, why can I not outline and stuff like that? And I knew some of these answers because I had a background in doing some, you know, personality alignment stuff with consulting that I had done. So I had this skill set, and I was also a writer at a time when writers really needed kind of industrial and organizational alignment, which is what a lot of my background was in. And so I started doing coaching help for authors in terms of, like, if we're assuming that you want to take this seriously, you want to be better, you know, at this career as a writer, how do we use a tool like a personality assessment to help you do that? And so that's kind of how I got into this. And what ended up happening is because I'm so curious and I just like learning things, you know, I kept trying to get better and better at being able to help authors have more and more success. And then over the course of my career, both as a podcaster and as a nonfiction writer, have talked about topics like burnout and overwhelm and writer's block and, you know, am I doing this right and what's wrong and why am I not having the success that I want? And so my whole kind of organizing principle around my author help is, I assume that you are the expert in you and that you know what is and that there is something right about who you are. And we want to try to take advantage of the things that are good and right about you and then try to understand if there's something in your way, what's really happening, not what I assume is happening, but what is really happening and how do we get you the kind of success that you want? Make no assumptions. Right. And so that's kind of my my background and how I got into this. But I started off very much as a fiction writer and still do write fiction.
Right. And that's the thing about writing. You know, I mean, I did neglect to say I also was a WGA agent and I had for 20 years and I had a lot of clients. However, most of them are, I've mentioned this many times on the show, they're gone. They don't write now. Because, like you're saying, the independent market is the best thing ever to come around because people are not sitting around with their manuscripts in a desk. They're putting them out, and they're very good books. Not everyone, but that's how life is, but they are some very good writers out there. But a lot of the ones that I represented, we did screenplays a lot, and they are gone. And you have to in order to stay in this business, which is what you do, you want to keep people in them, they have to have what it takes. And a lot of people don't because this is not easy. But which is why I do my show, to make people feel like they're not the only one, not make them, but try to help them actually realize that they, if they have it in them, don't stop. And you have written books on all these subjects. That they, you know, doing it right, doing it wrong, you know, burnout, all the things that every author, I don't care how successful an author is, they still worry, is this book going to be good?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think there's this misunderstanding of success that somehow we think, well, I'm going to reach a point in my in the trajectory of success where I no longer question. Right. Like, am I a good writer or can I do this? Or I'm going to, you know, I'll have more confidence when I have more success. And what we find is that's not actually true. In fact, sometimes the more you learn and the more competent you become, the more you mistrust your own knowledge of things, because you start to realize how much there is to know and how much you don't
right.
know. So there's just
right.
this feeling of
right.
like nothing
feel that
is
way
as
yeah.
we assume. Yeah, it's
yeah.
crazy. But nothing yeah. is as we assume. Everything is always so much more complicated than it would logically seem to be. And so often the thing that would logically seem to be correct, like, well, if you have more success, of course you're going to feel more competent because you have more experience feeling competent, and therefore you'll build that skill of competence. But that's definitely not how the human brain works. And so just me being able to know those things and to tell people, like, no, it's not weird that you
yeah.
would have $1 million in revenue and have written 70 books and still on book 71 think, can I really do this? That's the most normal right. thing ever.
Right, yeah.
Well, one thing I really like about...
Kristen, go ahead. Yeah, I know you had some things
yeah.
you want to talk about. Go ahead.
Well, one thing that I really loved about you, Becca, from your books and then hearing your romance author mastermind, was you talking about focusing on strengths instead of, you know, the weaknesses. And for me, like, when you talk about, like, if you can't outline, or, like, when you talked about the writer, the archetypes, you know, trailblazer and things like that, things that, you know, when you're writing, you don't think about. But when you lay some of that stuff out, it's like, oh, you know, pantser versus plotter, you know, me trying to outline, it's just not happening. And if maybe you could talk a little bit about the writer archetypes and things like that, because the focusing on the strengths is so important, because I think a lot of us just beat ourselves up about our weaknesses and just kind of poo-poo whatever strengths we have because they come maybe too
right.
easily.
Yeah, it's interesting because the majority of people, like, just our baseline thought is either that someone else is gonna be able to affirm, right, like, how I'm doing it, and that if I'm doing it differently than how someone successful is doing it, that means that I will not have their success outcome. So we look to other people to sort of validate, which is normal. Like, again, that's a normal human
yeah.
impulse. But then additionally,
yeah.
that validation somehow, if we're not doing it the same, we assume that process. So, like, outlining is a process, right? If I see a bunch
yeah.
of people who are outlining and writing excellent books, and I don't outline, then I assume that because I'm not doing the same process they are, that I can't have the same success they are. But success
yeah.
and process are completely independent of each other, to a point where I would actually say that, you know, the metaphor that I use a lot is, you know, imagine that someone has told you that in this land, this uninhabited land, there's a bunch of gold somewhere, and you want to go and dig up this gold, and they give you a map for it, and then you follow the map, and when you get to the X, the gold is not there. And what you assume is, I've done something wrong. I didn't follow the map correctly, when the reality is there's 100 maps, and you just don't know that there's 100 maps. So you
mm-hmm.
were given a map that is not the map that's for you. And so you're following someone else's trajectory, assuming that because they found gold at the end of that map, that you will also find gold at the X. And that's not how this works. What happens is they plunder their way through this land, and they find the gold because they do the right thing for who they are as a person. Right.
Yeah.
And so what we want to do is to kind of reset people's expectations from, if I do plotting, or if I do pantsing, or if I go indie, or if I go trad, or whatever the map is that they're following, that they're assuming that if I just do these 10 steps that other people have told me to do, that I will then have what they have. But instead, to look more at, you know, there are things about you that won't change, for instance. So if you're an intuitive author and you are a pantser, there's a reason that your brain does that is not an accident. It is very much
mm-hmm.
like a biological certainty of how you are wired, that's very predictable about how those things happen. So, like, the archetypes kind of came about because I would see all these different maps, right? And I'm like, oh, you're just following the wrong map. Here's the map that you should follow because you're wired more like this. So you are more of an intuitive writer. that means that you're more likely to do these five things and then have success by doing those five things. And again, it still is not a promise that if you follow these 10 steps, you're for sure going to find the gold, because the gold is still not governed only by process. I mean, that's the hard part in this industry, right?
Right, yeah.
There are
other factors
that guide success, yeah.
Yeah, and there is a lot, you know, because I really had no idea how many people don't outline, you know, and until I started doing shows, and people, you know, because I don't outline. And then people over the years, all these years of shows, you know, meeting hundreds of people, there are so many people, and there is no, and because of independent publishing, you can almost find your own strength yourself, because sometimes the editors, you know, they can take a good book also and change it, and it's not so good anymore, and it doesn't feel like it's your work. So now with independent publishing, people are allowed, there's so many more ways to go than you could before, even the cover, the marketing, you're in charge of things. It's not easy, though. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants somebody else to do it for them, but that doesn't happen all the time.
That's ultimately the problem, right, is that it is a very hard business to run, regardless of whether you sort of do things just like everyone else does them, and I'm using air quotes around that, if you are very different from the sort of median person, it's still going to be hard, because there's still so many things that are required to have happen that are out of your control, and it is harder to publish now than it was several years ago. And I don't mean push publish.
Yeah.
I mean harder to make money now than it was, you know, many years ago, just because there are so many extremely talented and very good, very savvy people out there. But the key for me is, no matter how saturated the market gets, no matter how many authors and how many books are available, the market is still always open. In terms of like, just because a market is saturated doesn't mean it's closed. Those two things are different. Because the market is always open for a book that people really, really want to read. And so anybody who listens to the sort of like veterans of publishing talk about the market today and is discouraged because the market feels closed, I'm like, oh, no. It is still exactly the same amount of open as it used to be. It is just much harder to know how to contextualize the results of your sales. Because a book not selling might just mean that you hit, you know, a big pocket that is very saturated and you need to, you know, try something different or write a new series or write a new book. But it doesn't mean what it used to mean, which is somebody's going to take your contract away. That's not what it means anymore.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, I've said this many times. I mean, I feel that Amazon is wonderful because it gets us what we need and, you know, all of that. However, with all the reviews and the comments and the posts, this is so intimidating to people. And I think that a lot of times they go, oh, this person has like 26,000 reviews and I have 10, you know, and so what do I do? And I think that people, you know, I'm including myself in this because I think, how do they get 26,000? They do. And I say, well, maybe if it's one of the billionaire book series or whatever, there is no way to know how that happens. No matter who I've had on, no matter how many times we've talked about this, there is no way to know how that even happens. And I think that makes people worry about their own writing and why they aren't having numbers. If there were no numbers, I think it would be a much better way to do things, because I think people would actually try new people. But also, the other thing is, now Amazon is checking things out because they opened the market to people that actually don't know how to write a book, and people are buying them and getting mad saying, how did you let this book out? Because they're blaming Amazon, I think, because they're coming now and saying, well, they'll send a message every so often, all your books are fine. And they just, that's it. So, and I noticed that a few months ago. So I guess they are checking now, because what happened is it exploded the market. Because when I started doing podcasts 15 years ago, ebooks were just coming out. I mean, people think ebooks were always here. They weren't.
Right.
And it was, and then, you know, so when you started, how did you feel about that? When you started how did you start? As an ebook or paperback or how did you do yours?
Yeah, I had contracts first, and so I did both. I did both print and ebook. Right. But as an indie, I did almost exclusively ebook at the beginning. I remember getting my first Kindle, right? And my family's always very early in adopting.
Yeah.
And I remember getting my first Kindle for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I was still in grad school, right? So I was not young when ebooks first kind of became super, super popular. Yeah. It wasn't that we didn't have access to digital, like PDF books and stuff like that existed, and you could buy a PDF of a book or like find it online somewhere if you wanted to try to pirate it. But in terms of actual delivery, you could always find pirated books. But in terms of delivery devices and the ability to actually read digitally, it's very new in the trajectory of publishing, especially because we've been publishing since 1585, right? So, like, you know, the publishing industry was print for so long, and ebook is so new in the trajectory. I remember my first Kindle, like, in my lifetime. And it was very odd to sort of feel like, well, I'm going to be able to carry my library around with me. And now we sort of don't think anything of it, right? Like, I have my whole library on my phone. I don't even think about it. Yeah, it's so weird.
When people were reading
about
books on their phone, I would go like, oh, I can never do that. And then I am doing that. Kristen, I know you probably have other questions. Do you want to ask a question?
Yeah, you talk a lot about burnout, which I think, especially because you've mentioned before about how, like, the indie market started out, and then, you know, people are doing everything, you know, the fear of missing out, you talk about that too. And right now there are a lot of people who things, you know, took off, but everything changes, you know, whether it's, you know, Facebook ads, people getting, you know, we've had other authors on the show before talk about all of a sudden they're locked out of doing Facebook ads, running ads. Or, you know, TikTok became big, or all the different social media things. And it seems like something will get big. Everybody will do it, whether it's newsletters, TikTok, whatever. And then that stops working because it gets saturated. So can you talk a little bit about dealing with author burnout?
Yeah, I see burnout as a very different experience from what, like, I think the way that we used to think about burnout, which is just sort of like, oh, you're working too hard. You know, like, you should slow down a little bit. And for me, burnout is more systemic. It is the expectations that we have about what it takes to get where we want to go are what cause the overwork when we do it. And when we overwork and also don't get the results that we want or that we think we're supposed to get, then that kind of burnout can happen very quickly. Or when we're being asked to do something, like just in talking about how quickly the market changes, right? If you think about the trajectory of all those things that you just described, so between newsletters in like 2013 and then Facebook ads in 2015, and then let's say like, you know, TikTok in 2020, and then now direct sales in 2023, right? Like, you see these 3 or 4 year just huge boom growth. And every year it feels like it's something different that everybody's trying. Yeah. And the downside is that everyone is trying these things and no one knows whether they're working for everyone, because they're not. They're not working for the majority of people that are using them, minus newsletters. Like, minus newsletters, because I do think that newsletters are in a different category. But people are – things are changing so quickly, and if you're not a person who gets energized by change and you're not excited about being on the frontier, you know, of all the new things that are happening, and what you really want out of life is for nothing to ever change and for you to just have this kind of baseline security for like your entire lifetime, and you don't want to learn a lot of new things, that publishing is going to be a really hard monster to keep up with because it's constantly going through these changes. So if you're a person who doesn't like change, you're going to burn out quicker trying to keep up with everything, because what would make you have a reproducible amount of energy is if you have just like a flat line with no change. So every time you have to go up and down and up and down and up and down, you are expending energy in both directions, but it's not getting you the outcome that you're looking for, which is security, right? So that's when burnout happens, is when the work and the outcome, that the work doesn't produce the outcome that you think it should. And you, especially when you keep telling yourself like, well, in a couple of years, I'll slow down, or, you know, in a year, once I get all of this done, nothing will change anymore. And, you know, things like that. But
no,
that's right, you're absolutely right,
because it's changing
right?
as we're speaking right now.
It changes.
Something
constantly.
Has changed.
And I don't think it's realistic to expect that it won't. Like, I don't think that it's realistic to expect in the long term that publishing is ever going to reach stasis. It's always going to be changing.
Right. It's a good way to put that, because that answers a lot of questions, because the truth is it does change, and everything does change. And that is why Facebook is changing, and TikTok, and this, you know, Instagram, and everything is changing. And so I think that one of the things, like for me, which I've talked about many times, because I've done this so long, I had so many different formats and I was so many different places that when you try to like organize to Facebook, you can't, because I'm finally figuring it out, because I've been on it for 15 years. So of course my pages are different. So I can't, one of them I can't get on the phone. The other one I can get on the computer. So I finally figured out one of my problems. I was opening pages like crazy years ago. And so, right, a lot of people start with one page and they stay with it. I'm not sure that's bad, because I have too much. So I realized that they changed some of the pages and made them your profile. So now I have 6 profiles, and that's where I got screwed up, because I have some people on one, some people on another, and I've over the years, they're not all together. So then I think, oh, I'll start all over again, and I'll just make a new page. So I said, oh, I'll do this. So then I realized, oh, I'm asking people to be my friend. They're going to think I'm hacking them. So next thing I know, people are sending me emails that I'm hacked. I go, no, you're not. So then I put on the page that, please understand, I'm just putting everybody together. You're not being hacked. So now I don't even want to do that at all, because it just confused everything. So that's where I am. And I just want to just go, like, forget it all, start over, and who needs 4,000 friends? I don't even know who they are. So that's another thing. Who are all these people that we have as friends? Do they pay any attention? We don't know that. Nobody does know that answer. I think what you're saying is good. You know, I'm changing. Yeah. Talk about change. I'm always changing. And that's also not great, because then you keep changing everything, and then you can't organize it together, because Facebook won't let you. And then go ahead.
Yes, the FOMO. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I stay on certain or join new. Like, I'll always be joining these new, social media things, because after everything happened with Twitter and X, there were a whole bunch that just exploded, and there are some that I joined that I don't even remember the names of them. There's probably an app on my phone. I joined, nobody was there, moved on to something else.
I have so many apps. I go like, what's this one for? And then I'm realizing, oh, I'm paying $6 for this, and I'm paying $8 for this, and $10 for this. I don't even remember that. You know, I remember that I did it, but then I have to go in, because then they keep, you know, they don't, if you don't tell them you don't want it anymore, they keep billing you.
Yeah. Well,
and then I'm
thread.
Like, why do I need
I
all
like
of
threads.
This?
I like threads when I remember that it exists. Like, I was on it today, but I can go weeks forgetting that it even existed, and then I'll see something on Instagram. I'm like, oh, that's right. Yeah, I do have a I should go over there, because it's actually a nice place. It's very different than it's very different than Twitter, because it really does follow the algorithm. So if you want to just see book things, you'll just see book things. It's not like Twitter where you've got political stuff, everything being thrown at you at once, and maybe you just want to go and think about books and not politics for 5 minutes.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's it. So what, Becca, what do you tell people when they say, because that is a big question, and we talk about it. Every show I'm going, oh, we're not going to talk about marketing, but we always do talk about marketing some way, because everybody is, either they're confused about it or they're doing too much of it, too little. So, I mean, what do you think is a good way for a new writer to start out? If you're just starting, because there's a lot of people that are, I can imagine what they think of all of these things when you first start, it's like overwhelming.
Yeah. I mean, the first question I always have for brand new people is, do you have any desire to do New York or not? Because if you have no publishing history whatsoever, you are the most, like, that's the most beneficial time to go in a New York direction. It's not actually, but if you have no publishing history, and you don't want to go to New York, that's a different question. But if you ever do have a desire to go to New York, I always encourage people to go to New York first and to try that out and see if they can get the kind of contract that they want, the kind of agent they want, write the book they want, stuff like that. Because being a debut is still a big deal in New York.
But
and
it's
having,
almost impossible, though, for people.
It's very hard.
And then they get depressed. Mm-hmm. And then they get depressed. And then
right,
they go,
but again, this is
I'm
the
done.
Piece. Yeah, this is the piece that I would say, though, is I would say no amount of rejection from anything, from you publishing books on your own, from you going to agents and editors and things like that, no amount of rejection is ever final unless you let it be. Because there's no such thing as like, oh, well, now you have tried everything there is to try and you might as well quit. No, there's always a chance that you might write the book that's going to be the next thing that takes off. And so please know that when we talk about things like, you know, oh, it's harder to get contracts, it's harder to sell, et cetera, it may indeed be that way. Like, it may very well be that way, and that might be true.
Yeah.
But that, again, it doesn't mean that it's closed. It really just means that it means that it is saturated, but there still is so much openness. And specifically, again, for debuts, I always encourage them to go in that direction. If you're not going to go New York ever and you want to indie, my best, and I tell this story a lot about, I have a friend who is a seven-figure author who's written almost 100 books. And so her conversation we had one day was, what do I wish that I had known when I started, right? And what she said was, I wish I had known how many one-star reviews it would take for me to make $1 million, because I would have wanted them to come so much more quickly than I was willing to let them come at the beginning. Because many of us early in our journey, we want to take one-stars and rejections and lack of sales so seriously. We want them to mean something. When the reality is every single thing you do in publishing is a learning curve. And as long as you're willing to do what you have to do to make money to be able to stay in the game for a long time, it definitely is the case that if you're continuing to learn and grow and you're continuing to take chances, that you are most likely to succeed when you don't give up. And again, that's not to say no one should ever give up, because it has to be about your, you know, what you can handle. But in terms of should you be, like, objectively, should you be disheartened by the fact that you've released books and they haven't sold? No, because most books don't sell. That's normal. What it does mean, though, is you have to build your resilience and your mindset to a point where those things are not going to deter you from continuing to try, because you know that contextually they don't have meaning. It's more like poker than it is like chess. So, like,
it's a game.
In chess, there's a limited number of end games and there's no luck, right? Like, there's just a limited number of end games.
Right.
So how smart you are and how well you play the game determines how well you win. But in poker, it's chance, and it is luck and skill as well. Like, there's a timing and luck involved in publishing. But there's also just resilience and being willing to continue believing that the future's open and that you could have success in the future. So as long as you can maintain that capacity, then I'm not worried about whether you publish and don't sell, or whether you, you know, query and don't fine because the future is always open.
Yeah, I think it's good if you – yeah, see, because I think if most of the people that have written from years ago, we all know what rejection letters are, okay? And mm-hmm. we all keep them, you know, and they're in our head always. Because I think it's important to have those because then, you know, it gives you a different – it gives you a different outlook. And besides that, I mean, when you – like independent publishing, it is a good thing, and people aren't taking it the way they should because – a lot of books that are independently published do make a lot of money. I mean, there are a lot. So you don't have to give up your career because you can't get someone in New York, you know, and mm-hmm. you just keep going. And you just – but I think some of the problems that started out were when e-books came out, people were putting anything and everything out there. And then other people were thinking, oh, you know, what does independent mean? You know, are you public? Is your book like when I first heard this, people were going like, what are you putting your book like with, you know, with paste? I mean, are they gluing the book together? I mean, that's how bad it was 15 years ago or maybe 17. People like iUniverse came out at that time and people were, I thought it was a lucky break for people because they could start publishing, whether they sold or not, but they could stay in the game. And that's what some of those sources did, you know, where they published, but then we all realized, which I always knew this, but other people didn't, you have to have it edited, you have to have a good book cover, and all of those things are, they're very possible now that you can get this done and you can get help. And look at all the people you've helped by all your books. I mean, this is a real logical way of how that people won't leave. I call it a game. You called it a game, too. I mean, it is a game. To stay in this is a game. But don't give up if you are a talented writer. Just don't. And don't look at your reviews.
Yeah, and if you love it.
You're right. Yeah, but you have to love it. And we talked about that a lot on my show.
Yeah.
Because you have to love this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like it is very much the – so many of us grew up with this picture of ourselves as adults where, like, we were professional full-time writers, right? And so we're still headed towards that dream. And if you think about that pathway as, like, a trajectory, like, I'm going to keep walking and taking steps down that road, and every time I do something like get a rejection or don't sell, we can feel like we're taking steps down a different road instead of still taking steps down that road. And I always feel like the rejection and sales going down and books not hitting and one-star reviews are all still on the same pathway, right? Like, it's not an indicator that you're doing it wrong or that you're on the wrong path or anything like that. And I feel like the ability to contextualize results, when you're earlier in your career, you don't have the ability to contextualize results in the same way that somebody does if they've been doing this or if they've seen, like, I've coached 6,000 plus individual authors, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that to me is, like, I've seen so much volume that I know when I say, like, it can happen at any time. What I mean is you could publish for 25 years and not take off, and then in that 26th year, take off. You could publish 16 books, and the 17th book is the one that takes off. You could not sell. In fact, some people have, like, periods where they sell really well, and then periods where they don't sell, and then periods where they sell takeoff books, like just killer making millions of dollars takeoff books. And then there are for sure people who have the kind of consistent trajectory of, like, I sold at 5 figures, then I sold at 6 figures, then I sold at 7 figures, then I sold at 8 figures. And that does happen to some people, but it's not the only map, again, right? Like, there are so many success maps out there, and we don't have the ability to see all of them, which is, again, this is why I do interviews and podcasts, why I share from my experience in coaching, is because there's so much that the individual writer can't do in terms of contextualizing their behavior because they just can't see a big enough picture. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think podcasts are important because people, you know, they're not alone. A writer, you know, look at all writers, I mean, not all, but most of us understand each other, you know, and our regular friends do not understand each other. you know, us, yeah. I mean, because they don't know what we go through and our, like, our characters when we are writing fiction. They are like, people to us. I'm having going to have a show like that about characters, you know, just characters. I've had so many shows over the years, but sometimes you still need to redo shows over and over and talk about different things, but they are the same you've talked about maybe 5 years ago, but as I'm different 5 years from, I'll be 5 years different later, you know, in other years. But you just change all the time, like, you know, and that's what you said. But so your characters mean something. So don't give up on, like, let's say one or two of your books, nobody buys. And then, like you're saying, the third, maybe the fifth, maybe the tenth. I've had people on that say, oh, my seventh book, that did it. But you got to stay in the game for the seventh book. And so people like you that are doing this, it helps them because you're telling them they're not alone.
Yes.
Yep. Which is why I do my show. I don't want them to feel that they're alone. Kristen, do you have anything you wanted to ask Becca?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about how the Gallup's test, the Gallup's strength test, can help writers, because I just found that fascinating. And I took it. I know you said don't take it more than once, but I may or may not have taken it twice. But my top two strengths stay the same.
Yeah. I mean, what I typically find, too, is that the first results are the most accurate, just in terms of, like, when I listen to people, I usually hear the way they really are in their first test and then the way they want to be. Right? Like, the things that I'm like, yes, I don't like having that pesky empathy strength at number one, so let me see if I can get rid of that one. And it's like, oh, but you have it, though. Which is, and again, it totally depends on the context of when you take the test. I tell a lot of people, if you took the test in a corporate context, I would retake it anyway, just because a lot of people don't test correctly when they take it in a corporate context, because their expectations and, well, always. But anyway, so the whole concept of the strength, which is where we really do the majority of our coaching, individual coaching, is around strength, because the core concept is, if you look at what it takes to be successful and what you're doing is actually looking at the data, you're not narrowing and saying, I'm going to pick these five successful people. But you're saying, let's maybe look at 2 million successful people and ask them how they are successful rather than making assumptions. And again, I think this is the kind of core of what I like about the way that we approach things, is if I make no assumptions about why I think you're successful, because I'm not coming to this being like, well, everybody who's successful gets up at 5 a.m. or whatever, right? Like that kind of thing. And instead say, well, what makes you successful? How do you do this? How did you do this? And then they looked at all of the data of how all of these just hundreds of thousands of people were successful who had been identified as being successful. And what they found was the patterns were so much more nuanced than they thought they were. But the patterns were definitely there in terms of, like, you know, all of the people who talked about success in a way that showed all of these particular traits, they all showed up together all the time when they would talk. So it's like, okay, that's clearly a pattern. And then all the people who talked like this, those traits all showed up in the same way. So that's clearly a pattern. Mm-hmm. And so the patterns of how am I successful specifically, and then what does that look like in, you know, Gallup kind of does this in a corporate setting, right, where, you know, what does it look like to be successful as a person who has high empathy, for instance, or, you know, high achiever is another one of the strengths. There's 34 different strengths. And then what we do is we look at what we know to be true about the data that Gallup collected, that Dr. Clifton collected, and we look at how might you interpret that as a writer. So what might empathy people need to think about when they're authors? What might a high achiever person need to think about? How might they act differently? How might they need different kinds of discussion and support and things like that? And we kind of try to build our individualized support around the concept that everybody is different, and those differences matter more than anything in how you are going to be successful, and that if you can have somebody who really understands those strengths, that nuanced difference in success really, really well, that you can find your own map, essentially, right, which is what we're hoping to help people do, is to help them construct this map for themselves that is different from everyone else's map.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, focusing on, you know, what makes you tick. Like you had talked about some people who write to market and some people who it's just almost impossible for them to be able to write to market. And I do find myself sometimes when I'm at writing conferences, I hear them talking and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I write like, you know, a book a month, which I thought my jaw fell on the floor because I could not. I can barely do a grocery list a month. But, you know, and all the things like the outlining and this and the writing to market. And it was almost like, and I explained it to my mother as trying to make a toilet flush the opposite way. Was me trying to wrap my mind around some of these concepts.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot to take in for people. It's a lot, you know, because then that's when they give up sometimes, because they're taking in so much in every 5 minutes, how to get an email, how to make $10,000 in a month, how to make $100,000 in 6 months, you know.
Well,
and then you listen to the webinar, and then it's really not about that at all.
Oh, it froze me. And I said to Marcia before that I've questioned myself ever since some of these, like with the writing to market stuff.
Yeah, because it is very much touted as this is the way to make money, right? Well, if you just write to market, this is the way you make money. And that was the first set of archetypes that I did a presentation about, was they're called the write to market archetypes, right? And there's on one extreme is the island archetype, which is, You're literally, you couldn't write a book other than the book that you are going to write, no matter what's going on in the market. You cannot make yourself take that into consideration when you sit at the manuscript, right? It's like you're an island all unto yourself, and whatever the market is doing, it's just going to do on its own. And so you have that one extreme on that one side, and it goes all the way over to the two types that are so obsessed with the market that they will either do exactly what the market dictates, which is the drafters, or they will do the opposite. They intentionally try to break the market and do things that don't exist in the market, and that's the trailblazers. Yeah. And so, like you have this wild difference between the people who are so – the concept of doing something that is – for the market at all, even if they think it would be cool, they might be like, oh, yeah, I would really love to be able to write to market. But when they sit down at the manuscript, they can't even make themselves care about, I should change this mind, but I'm not going to do that. So, and there are extremely successful island archetypes in terms of people who are writing books that are still widely accepted by the market, where they don't take the market into consideration even for a hot second while they're writing. And they still sell like bonkers. And we had a we had an island at one of our conferences where, when I was first discussing this, and he sort of started laughing, and I knew he was an island because we talked about it. And I kind of was like, okay, can you describe for people like what happens when you sit at your manuscript? And he just chuckled and he was like, I mean, I don't care what the readers want. I don't care what the market wants. I don't care. And yet he had more reviews on his first in series book than Game of Thrones. Right.
Wow.
So I was you clearly have written something that is so popular that tens of thousands of people want to read and have read and have loved this. And yet, what do you think about when you sit down to write? And he's like, I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah.
But
see, that's
the readers love what he does, right?
Yeah.
That's his personality. You got to let people who are wired that way know that there's not some righteousness attached to intentionally crafting for the market when you're sitting at the manuscript. That for some people, the only time they need to think about the market is when they are making the cover and the blurb, and everything else is just like, don't even think about it, right? And they need to know it's not a bad way to be. It doesn't mean you're not going to have success. But again, if you listen to the people who are fusing process and outcome, then you think that if I don't write to market, I'm never going to be able to make money. But it's just not true.
It's not, right. It's really about writing a good story. If they're writing fiction, you know, write a good story. You know, and that is what the name of this. This is how I started out on this broadcast. It was, I was with Red River, and it was a good story is a good story because that's what you should write. You write a good story with a beginning, middle, and end. And I think that now because of all these series and everything, you know, sometimes they want you in the first two pages, you got to grab that reader. I get that. But it doesn't always work that way because there are very successful authors that you have to read a little more than one or two pages to see if it's a good book. You know, and I think that that's a problem for people because if they don't write the greatest first page, they think they can't sell. And that's really not true. But that's what people say to people. Oh, get that first page. But what if you get the first page and then you can't write anything after that that's good?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why you see movies because a lot of the people in Hollywood, when they read a script, they read the beginning, they read the end, and then in between, people fall asleep because that middle is not good. And then at the end, they have singing and singing and dancing at the end. And then people go, oh, this is a great movie. I loved it. They walk out of the theater loving it, but not realizing that for an hour, they were just bored. So you have to just write a good story. And I think that needs to, you know, that's a hard thing. And you got to think of that when you're writing that you just can't throw anything out there. Like, you know, you had something where you said you throw it and stick to the wall. I saw it one year. Yeah, that's not how it goes.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. Do you want to talk about the title? You want to, I think you mentioned something about, you know, the description. So that is a very tough thing for people to write. What's your advice on the description? Because that's the killer, I think.
Yeah, if you're not good at it, like if you're not a good, you know, blurb writer or if you're not a good description writer, I would hire somebody to do it. Just because there's no use. If you're going to do all this work and then, I mean,
that's
by all means, take the classes if you want to. Try to figure out how to do it yourself. But there definitely is a personality of person who they cannot concisely tell a story that takes them 100,000 words to tell. They cannot tell that story in a paragraph.
I know.
Right?
I know.
Where there are some people and whose personality is like they can easily switch between telling a big picture 10,000-foot level story and an on boots on the ground story, and it does not bother them in the same way. But there are some people who cannot objectively tell a 100,000-word story in a paragraph. So if you're that kind of person, and this is kind of my, you know, quick hack for everyone and everything in this, if you are not good at it and you've tried to learn it and you can't learn it, find someone else to do it or stop doing it. Because it's just
hard
not
to find
worth
someone, though. How do you find? I mean, it really is hard to find someone to do it. I've tried it. It doesn't work.
It's easy for us. Right. I would say it depends on what it is that you're looking for in outcome. If what you're looking for is, I want to hire someone that will make me sell 100 million books, that's not something a blurb can do for you.
No, right. No,
right.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
But if what I'm looking for is, can I get someone to write a compelling blurb? Like, the place I always encourage people to go first is I encourage people to try out Readsy. Just because it is a curated set of professionals that are working on Readsy. And so I do encourage Readsy.com. But there are definitely places now where you're seeing more marketplace. Like Readsy is kind of a similar thing where it's like, we will be the people who vet the contractors for you. And we will tell you, like, these people got stars and these people didn't and, you know, whatever. But anytime you can find a marketplace like that, I would go there first.
Right.
And also,
you know, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just want to finish because I wanted to hear that myself too.
Oh, so, and also I would ask in the Facebook groups that are the bigger Facebook groups for authors, like I would ask somewhere like Wide for the Win, where on Facebook, you know, there's 18,000 people in that group who are all Wide authors. And if you just go in there and say, does anyone have a recommendation for a blurb writer you're at least going to have a place to start, right? Like they may not be able to solve the problem for you, but they'll give you enough suggestions or just search in that group for where other people have asked for it. Right.
And, you know, which is when, like with screenplays, you have one mm-hmm. sentence to get that log line right. And so I always felt it was, you know, I just, you know, always felt when I read that one sentence, I still wanted to read the script because it wasn't fair to say I'm not going to take a client because of one sentence, especially if you have a comedy. How do you tell a whole, you know, it to me, they always sounded trite. But when I read the scripts, I knew that the script was good. And so that's a problem, that, you know, with screenwriting, because you need that, and with books. And that is, so I think it's a good idea then what you're saying now, because I, you know, I do think that is one of the hardest things to do, is make it really compelling to make that person want to buy that book or read the rest of the screenplay if you're sending it out. It's hard. But you do a million of them. I mean, and it doesn't, and they don't sound right. And sometimes, you know, I, on occasion when I was sending out screenplays, I would change the title and put three different types of screen, you know, log lines to see which caught, and it was really weird to watch it, but they chose one against the other, and it was the same screenplay. So, see, that's the other thing. You don't really know it. So it's who's reading it to say, this is good. And that's the problem. We all face these things. And so I think it's a good idea to try to hire somebody because and keep trying to find the right, you know, right words, because I think that is a difficult thing to make it not sound trite or like anybody else's. And if you try to write a good one, that description that you think is great, and if your book isn't really about that, that is really a bad thing to do because people really do not like that. You know, and people do that all the time. They put somebody else's idea in there and it doesn't match the story. But they want to get the sales, but it does. And when the people read the book, they go, this isn't about that.
Yeah, I've seen publishers do that.
Yeah. They do. Yeah, it's hard. Is there anything that you'd like to say, you know, Becca, you know, we're almost at the hour. I mean, we can stay on longer, but I'm wondering, is there anything that you feel that's the most important for people to understand or want to get that more strength with their writing?
Yeah, I would say there are two things that I think are super fundamental key just for long-term in this career. One is... Yeah. You have to be willing to let bad things happen to you. Like you have got to be willing to release a book and it doesn't do well. Like you have to have some kind of resilience. And if you haven't done emotional resilience work in the past, just in terms of like doing either inner child work or some kind of trauma response therapy or something like that, I would consider going and finding someone like the personal development school is a great one. Sarah Baldwin is a good one. Trying to increase your emotional resilience, because this is the thing that no one can fix for you.
Yeah.
You have to fix it for yourself, right? It's like no one can give you a tool that is going to fix if you are not allowed to fail or if you cannot take critique, right? Like all of those things, we have to increase our emotional resilience skills if we want to be in this business in the long term.
Yes.
The other thing I would say, I just think this is such a fundamental truth that I wish everybody could understand this. Whatever you think that you're doing that's weird or wrong, that you don't see other people doing, I mean, unless you're murdering people, you know what I mean? Like, don't take this to the absolute nth degree, but in terms of just writing craft or the way you want to structure your business or something like that, there's nothing that you can do that is something you shouldn't do just because you see everyone else doing the opposite.
Yeah.
And the examples I always use are things like, you know, oh, everybody's getting on TikTok. Well, right, but how many people are actually having success on TikTok? Very, very few.
Yeah.
Well, everyone is doing direct sales, right? But how many people are actually having success on it? How many people are actually having success selling on social media? How many people are actually having success wide or in KU or doing Kickstarter, whatever it is? Very few. So there is no such thing as a thing you absolutely have to do in this industry. And anything you feel internally, like, well, I don't like outlining, I don't like being on social media, I don't like whatever, I guarantee you there are successful people who are doing that weird thing that you think is weird, bad, or wrong. And just because other people are doing it differently does not mean that you are weird, bad, or wrong for doing it that way. And I need people to extrapolate that everywhere that isn't something that's breaking the law.
In other words, it's actually giving people freedom to be themselves. And that's really important, to be who you are and not to want to be like somebody else, because you don't really know what's in their life. Be who you are. I mean, I've said this many times when my grandmother has told me, and she would always say, don't look at other people. You don't really know what their problems are and say, oh, I want to be like them. So I've never wanted to be like anybody else. So I think that what you're saying is really right. Do what's best for you. Just because the guy over there does it or the woman over there and they're successful, you don't really know what their life is like or anything. Just kind of be who you are. That's really important as a writer, and be able to take, you have to take rejection. You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, and don't use it as rejection. Use it as a tool to get you further.
Oh, yeah.
To say like, oh, I can do this. And you know, especially when someone says like to me, oh, you can't do this. I go, what do you mean I can't do this? I am going to do this, you know, because that's who you have to be yourself. And don't want to be like any, you know, I think it's not good to do that. It's not healthy, because you see all these people, and I'm sure like what you're saying, you run into this all the time. And it has to be coming from them. Kristen, is there anything you'd like to ask?
Well, a lot that you talk about was like the question, the premise, and that's really so much of what you've shared with us today about, you know, questioning the premise, the QTP that you talk about in your books and on your podcast and all.
Yeah, like the whole baseline for me of QTP is a sort of like the map is not the outcome, right? So just because it looks like this is a sure thing, or just because it looks like, you know, other people are having success or whatever, there's so many more nuanced things that might be going on there, and you don't have to assume that anyone is correct about what you should do. Because there so often is a personality reason why you shouldn't do it that way. Like just what you were describing about, you know, the right to market thing. And I'm like, well, yeah, but there's so many people who are so successful ignoring the market. Like just not even thinking about what the readers want, or trying to make themselves write what everyone wants or any of that stuff. There's so many people who can just do that by nature because they're writing books to make themselves happy, which is that island that I was describing earlier.
Yeah.
That's why he wrote. He was telling himself a story that he wanted to read. And that was what made his readers want to read that as well, was he happened to have a lot in common with them in terms of what he thought was cool and good. So, like, just know that there is no silver bullet. There is no magic pill.
Right.
And anyone who's promising you that there is either lying to you or lying to themselves. And that's just the truth.
I totally agree with that, because I say this all the time. You have to listen to yourself, and you don't want to be like other people, because it's really really mentally and emotionally, it's hard to follow a map, like you say, in that way, because it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the other people, and you don't even know who they are or anything about them, other than they may be successful, but you really don't know how they got there, and it doesn't matter because it's about you as a writer.
Yeah.
So this has been very interesting. Though I have only one link that I put on my page. Do you want to send me the link for your coaching? So if people want to, you know, have coaching from you.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. It's just the betterfasteracademy.com. Is the best one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, I can.
And because
that.
Also I put a link here on the page, so to the Amazon where all your books are. So if they need help on one specific thing, like, you know, you have it doing right, doing it wrong, burnout, you have all the things that writers need to understand about themselves that they don't, especially when you're starting out, you just don't want to quit. So you have books on all of those subjects.
Yep.
And your burnout theory is different. So that's a good thing because you can't give up. Mm-hmm. You know, but it does come from within ourselves. You know, that I agree with you on. Yeah, it's us, you know. And even though sometimes we're mad at ourselves and we talk to ourselves because we do, it's just, and maybe other people don't, but I think writers do talk to themselves a lot. That's how we get our characters from ourselves, even though we're not the character, but that's how we get things in our brain. We're not exactly like everybody else. Because I'm sure when everybody out there that's writing, they think of things in a different way. Like, I'll ask people, what are you thinking about? They go, nothing. Like, I'll look at something, I'll go, oh, this could be a story. You know, and I think writers do that, or other people don't. So I wonder how, like, because we're always writing, I think, whether we know it or not. You know, that's why we don't relax as much as other people do, I think. I'm not sure. That's my theory. And I think I know a lot of people like that. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been really good to hear what you have to say. I mean, you're very successful at what you do, and that's good. I mean, it's really, you're giving people what they need, which isn't easy to do.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoy doing it a lot.
Yeah, well, that's why you do it. I mean, that's the thing. Enjoyment and having fun is much better than not having fun. So just kind of I think people should just lighten up, you know, and not be so hard on themselves. Because that itself is overwhelming, being so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And those are my words. And thank you for being on. And Kristen, as always, thank you. And next week, Melissa Smith will be on. And she's got, you know, she's got some tips for writing. She wrote a book about, you know, for how to market when they can't really afford to do all these expensive programs. Because that's the other thing. This does cost money, a lot of things that we do. You know, and we all do it, you know, but a lot of people can't. So she'll be discussing that, and that will help people out there that are thinking, oh, I don't have money to do this. But she has not spent money in her career on doing this because she can't. So she wrote it. And so I think this will help other people that are wondering what to do because, as you know, independent publishing does cost money. You know, as much whatever lengths we take to make it not so expensive, it still costs money. So, but we still need all these authors out there. You know, and with your coaching, I'm sure this is bringing up a lot of new writers that need help from a person that knows what they're talking about, other than listening to people that don't know what they're talking about. That can hurt them.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
That we could do a show on that. So everybody, take care.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, and have a great night. Thank you. Bye-bye.